Thank you, Ken. Can you hear me? Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Regina, for a really beautiful teaching just then. I really appreciate that. And thank you, Ken, for thinking of me and asking me to do this, to share my spiritual path and about what I'm teaching. I really appreciate it. I will start off by saying I'm, of course, incredibly nervous and have been since I was asked to do this. And but I know that in thinking about that and looking inward about that, it's given me a great opportunity to continuously look and ask who is the one who feels nervous, you know. And that's, you know, I've asked for truth in my life, and every opportunity that comes up where I feel uncomfortable is a perfect chance to practice and to look and see why, or who, actually. Not so much why, but who feels uncomfortable. So thank you. It's a really great opportunity to practice for me, so I appreciate that. I guess I'll just start out, you know, I didn't really prepare. I just figured I'd kind of wing it, because preparing would just make me feel more nervous. But, you know, I definitely want to start off by saying that to really, you know, when you listen, to really listen with your heart. Language and words are so, they mean different things to different people all the time. And I don't worry so much about language and what exactly it means. I just share from my heart. So I just invite everybody to just listen from your heart and to feel what's behind what I'm saying with my story. And I think that's the most helpful. So, you know, I've throughout my life, I've had certain feelings that have been with me throughout my different stages, you know, no matter where I am. Certain things such as I've always had this tendency to feel like I was an outsider, like I wasn't like other people, that other people had something that I didn't have, that I needed to figure out how to get this life thing down like other people had, and then somehow I'd be happy like they are. I've had feelings of guilt and shame and unworthiness that have followed me throughout my life. And I will say I'm 41 now. I'll be 42 in a few weeks, and I have 3 kids. So, you know, I've been through a lot, and these feelings, no matter what I've gone through, have followed me, you know, throughout my whole life. Another big one was this, like, feeling of dread in my stomach, like I'm about to get in trouble, no matter what the situation. It could be a positive situation or a negative situation. My mind would twist it into this fear that I was going to get in trouble. And early in my life, I was born... my dad was an Air Force officer, a career Air Force man, very intellectual, electrical engineer. He went to the academy. We traveled. We moved a lot when I was little. And so, you know, that feeling of being an outsider and not belonging, while there was a sense of belonging within the military, of course, and in those families, I was always going to a new school growing up, and the fifth grade was actually the first year that I didn't go, that I actually got to go to the same school again, and that I didn't repeat, or that I didn't leave and go to a new school. So it was the first year that I went to the same school, and the first year that I didn't cry on the first day of school, which was a big deal for me. But I only bring all that up because it goes into that I always felt like an outsider, and I really believed that the reason...
Sorry about that.
It's my speaker turning off. I really believed that the only reason... I used to believe that the only reason that I felt that way was because of how I was brought up. That if somehow, if things had been differently, if I hadn't had to move around all the time and I'd had this solid place where I'd always lived my entire life, that I wouldn't feel like an outsider. But no matter how I made my life look throughout my life, I still always felt like an outsider. And I could have sworn early on in my life that it was because of how I was brought up. My family was also fundamentalist Baptist, and you know, my dad had come from a long line of Catholics, and he didn't like certain things about Catholicism, and he was really attracted to something in, you know, fundamentalist Christianity. And so I'm the youngest of three, and I came into a home that that had a lot of anger and a lot of fear. That, you know, was anger and fears my father had, but that were just being backed up and justified by fundamentalist teachings. And so, I never knew a time when I didn't know of God or quote unquote believe in God or whatever you want to call it, but it was always tinged with fear, a lot of fear, and you know, physical and emotional abuse that were justified by the teachings. And you know, that again, when I was talking about the feelings that have followed me my entire life, that feeling of the other shoe's going to drop and I'm about to get in trouble, I really believed came from my upbringing. I really believed that early on. And I'm kind of going through this chronologically, but I guess maybe I should say a little bit about, real quick, about kind of where I am now with, you know, where I am now. I really am grateful for having found Regina's teachings probably about a year and a half ago, that eventually led me into finding the Awakening Together community. And I really know deep inside now that, and it fits perfectly with the 2 Timothy readings that I've been doing this week and where we are in the workbook, but I really, really know that all of these circumstances in my life are the props, like 2 Timothy talks about, the NTI, 2 Timothy. They're the props, in that there is something in my mind, in my thinking, and I have this story that I created around me in order to reinforce the belief that I was separate. And so Kathy's asking, what's EE? Electrical engineering. Yeah, thanks, Ken. So I just, where I am now is I know that all of this stuff that I'm talking about when I'm saying that this stuff was happening in my story, it's coming from a place now where I really know that this is something that I chose, and that I'm actually really, really grateful for all of the circumstances in my life and what I've gone through, because it's been the perfect path for me to grow spiritually. So, you know, there was a lot of shame-based teaching in my home of my family of origin. What I would do as a child is, between the moving around and then feeling like an outsider from that, there was also a bit of an outsider thing actually within the Christianity. It's funny because my parents also really believed that you shouldn't celebrate Christmas, which I understand all of, you know, they believed it was a pagan tradition and that Jesus actually wasn't born in December and all of that stuff. And so it, a couple of the schools that I went to when I was really small were Christian schools, and they'd have the Christmas pageants. And I remember being, you know, a preschooler and a very young elementary child and having to sit out. And it's funny because even within that Christian community, I had those, you know, circumstances that were reinforcing this belief that I'm somehow an outsider and separate. And so what I would do as a child is I saw other families, or I saw situations or homes that I thought were happy, and they were a quote unquote good family. It's another thing I did when I was little was I was very black and white, and I decided things were good or they were bad. And there were good people and there were bad people. There were happy families and there were families that weren't happy because they were bad, you know, and I thought that we somehow must have been bad. And so I would see what other families looked like, and I was convinced that if I had a life that looked a certain way, I would be happy. I was convinced of it as a child, and I knew in my own mind that one day I was gonna go and I was gonna do things my way, and they would be better. And you know, I really, really believed that, and I held to that. And you know, fast forward many years, and things changed with my family, and we stopped going. You know, the last move we made to Virginia, they couldn't find a church that they were happy with, and I think life just kind of got in the way, and we stopped going to church. And I also, as a kid, I would have these moments of connection where I knew I felt very connected to something higher than me. You know, and I would. I would feel this very, very strong draw to God and to following what God's path was for me. And immediately this feeling of fear would clamp down on me, because I was convinced that if I followed what God wanted for me in my life, I would end up living this very austere missionary type life. Because giving your life to God, the only images I had of that were what I saw in a fundamentalist church. And so I've always felt this strong pull for, you know, to walk with God and to be close to God. But I was very, very scared of it at the same time, because I was so afraid that it meant doing things that I didn't want to do and living a life that I wouldn't want to live. And I also, I had this thing in my mind too when I was little that, it's like I never understood why there was such an argument about you know, the origin of humanity and whether there was a Big Bang or evolution happened, or whether there it actually was Adam and Eve the way it was in the Bible. And it just never made sense to me that there was an argument about that, because I figured if God was the thing, that little thing that started it all, then it really didn't matter. And I just had these kind of thoughts when I was little, and I look back on it now and I kind of see it as kind of seeing from a different vantage point, where I wasn't getting as caught up in the details even when I was little. Like the fundamentalist religions, at least the Baptist one that I was involved with, there's so many details and there's so many sins and rights and wrongs and this and that. And it just never made sense to me. And so, you know, I also, you know, fast forward many years, and I also have been blessed with, this will probably sound strange to a lot of people, but I also have been blessed with alcoholism. When I was about 14 years old, I found drinking, and it gave me so much relief from all the internal struggle that I had within myself and all the discomfort. And, you know, I I drank for 20 years, and it was a progression, like many people, but I ended up getting sober when I was 34, and it was a huge, huge blessing for me, because I had a few years before that, so probably about 10 years ago, I really started getting, I was feeling that call again, like I was saying, that I always felt when I was little from God, but I really started feeling it again. I had spent years and years and years taking the self-help route. I joked that I could have, I've sold them all to that half-price bookstore, but I joked that I had like every self-help book you could get, and my shelves were like sagging because of all of these books that I had. I was trying to figure out how to fix me. I felt uncomfortable. I didn't feel right, and I was sure that there was something wrong with me. And in the meantime, you know, when I was 25, I got married. I chose my ex-husband based on those things that I talked about from my childhood, where I just wanted everything to look right, and if I found a family that I could fit into, and then, you know, have my own children and create a family that looked okay, I would be happy then. And I'd have these children, and I would raise them, and I would do it the right way and the way I wanted to do it, and then somehow things would be better. And so, you know, I really chose my ex-husband based on those things, and obviously I'm sure you can tell, you know, that didn't really work out, because it was based on me trying to fix something. And you know, so those feelings of inadequacy and not being okay didn't go away, no matter how I changed the props in my life, no matter how much I changed the way things look. It didn't change anything about the discomfort that I felt inside. And the only thing, you know, through that time that I could find to feel better was alcohol. And it was just a way that I could, you know, manage what I didn't know how to take care of inside of me. And, you know, I functioned and I took care of my kids, and I went about my life, but, you know, I had a friend help me get sober, and she was somebody who was sober and was going to, you know, 12-step, she was in 12-step program, and I, you know, I realized that she was doing that, and for some reason I decided to go ahead and go, you know, start going to meetings with her, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And, you know, I learned a lot by doing 12-step work that has been amazing, you know, really helpful for me, and has really pushed me kind of along this path. And one thing about me with the way I've gone about, the way my spiritual journey's kind of unfolded and what I've kind of seen, is that I think because of the fundamentalist, fear-based, really strongly fear-based religion that I had growing up, I'm very, very sensitive to noticing any type of fear-based teaching in any spiritual situation at all. And so I kind of have a filter where I'll see very quickly if something or there's a teacher that's kind of approaching something from a fear-based standpoint. And I'm also, for whatever reason, I used to beat myself up about it, that I couldn't stick with things, but now I see, you know, as I've gone on my path anyway, sometimes I find something and it's exactly what I need in that moment, but it's not meant to stay with me for my lifetime. And so I used to, you know, really get upset with myself that I couldn't be, you know, I couldn't stick with something, I couldn't be consistent. But I see now that for me, I've outgrown some things and they've dropped away, and that's okay. You know, I'm always drawn to teachings that are very, very heart-based, very compassionate, and very, very just loving and accepting. Ones that don't come across as if you need to be forced into growing spiritually. Ones that teach or are presented as if waking up is inevitable. It is inevitable, and so there's no need to push people to fit into a box that they don't necessarily fit into. I'm really, really resonating with how Regina always talks about that we need to find our inner guide, and that she can't tell us how to do that or tell us what's the right way or the wrong way. So when something stops feeling right for me, I just accept that and I move. You know, I in the meantime have probably found something else that feels right for me. But I'm learning more and more to trust that inner guide, and I know that inner guide's been with me my entire life. But what I learned, you know, getting into recovery and being involved in the recovery community was that, you know, I was convinced from as a little child, as I talked about, that if I could have just made the picture look a certain way, everything would be okay. And I saw, you know, going to meetings and talking with other people in recovery, no matter what kind of recovery it was, I realized, you know, I heard people, you know, share and say things that were pretty much exactly what goes through my head. And these would be people who, from all walks of life, people who had the perfect life that I swore if I had just had it, everything would be okay. And so for me, it was a really, really great way for me to see that it wasn't about the picture. It wasn't about what was happening on the outside of my life. It was about something on the inside and going inside to find the answers, not rearranging the picture. I also learned, you know, I had a really amazing woman who I'm still friends with that I worked with very early on, who was very quick to tell me, you know, that my drinking was not my problem, that there was something, you know, that it was a symptom of something deeper. And I'm really grateful that I was taught that right away. And I found that to be true. It absolutely is true. But if, you know, because for years I tried to fix the drinking, and I was convinced if I got the drinking under control, then things would be better in my life. And if I continued to do that, I thought, okay, I'm going to get this drinking under control, and then everything's going to be okay, and I'll just make my life look perfect. If I kept going on that course, I would have missed this huge opportunity, which is, you know, recovery was a door opening for me to go even deeper in my spiritual growth that I'd already had some up to that point. But I was ready to go deeper. And I firmly believe that, you know, people who do get addicted to things physically and have devastating consequences because of it, you know, or even things like, you know, even process addictions like gambling and food addictions and things like that. When you have something going on like that and it's so obviously devastating in areas of your life and to other people, it's really a blessing, because having talked to so many people and been involved with a lot of different people in a lot of different environments, I see we all have this I don't know if it's so much a hole or just, we have this desire to go inward and to reconnect. We all have it. but some people have more painful outward experiences that are, for me, it was an absolute blessing to have that, because I was forced to get on a path of recovery, and it opened things up for me spiritually. I really learned too in recovery to, we've talked a lot about grievances with the past couple of weeks. There's been a lot of workbook lessons that have touched on grievances, and that's something that with the 12-step work, I really did a lot of work with that, and I really learned how to look within and to really see the part that I was playing in things, as opposed to just blaming everything on everybody else in the world. If my kids would just do X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't feel so stressed, and I wouldn't need a drink, or, just anything. And so it was super, really, really helpful in learning how to look within and to stop blaming everybody else for, what was happening in my life. And there's this other thing that I really love from the 12-step traditions, which is that there's, this thing that's taught that, if you're looking outside and you're seeing a problem, it's actually a reflection of something going on inside of you. And that was my first really aha moment with that teaching, that the world is just a mirror of what's going on inside of us. And when I learned that, it really hit me to the core, and it was one of the most valuable things that I learned in that situation. And then also, of course, just the whole practice of acceptance, learning that I have no idea what's happening in my life. I have no way of labeling things as being good or things as being bad. I couldn't possibly know, because, there was a time when I would have sworn that my drinking was a horrible thing. It was the worst thing ever. But it's actually ended up being one of the best things in my life, because it's gotten me, it really pushed me into deep spiritual work, very deep spiritual work. So how could I possibly know, how could I possibly label things that are happening in my life or in the world or in other people's lives? How could I possibly, really have the arrogance to think that I can say what's right or wrong? It's just, for me, I really know it's just being in the moment and showing up for the situations in my life exactly as they're happening in the moment. And that's something that I really started learning in that situation. And then willingness, just the whole idea of being willing to, I've said before that I often don't have willingness, or I don't understand exactly what willingness is. But I've many times prayed for the willingness to be willing. And that's it's like that little mustard seed of faith that is talked about in the Bible, that we just need that tiny, tiny little bit of willingness to open the door. And it's amazing what can happen with that. I've been sober almost about a little over 7.5 years now, and I definitely love what I got out of being in that community, but I've I've also outgrown it in some ways too, and I've found other paths that have just resonated more with me. And it's always wait, hold on 1 second. Let me gather my thoughts. There was always this idea in recovery that there were normal people who somehow didn't struggle the way that alcoholics did. And I'm sorry if I'm talking so much about the alcoholism and the recovery, but that really has been the crux of my spiritual growth for many years. And that was just something that, you know, I kind of started to outgrow looking at things that way. And I've always been somebody who's been a seeker, and I, like I talked about, I'll find something and it'll resonate with me for a long time, and then maybe I'll move on. And right now where I am is that I'm reading that the Adyashanti book, The Way of Liberation, in the program where I share on Monday nights. And I've really embraced a lot of his teachings and listening to a lot of the recordings that you can find on YouTube with him, because he holds that open space of awareness that we've been learning about in the General Healing Group. And it's like, you know, I'm everything's kind of coming together, especially with doing the General Healing Group and then reading that book from Adyashanti, and pointing to this place for me where it's all about the awareness. It's all about what's in the moment. And what I was talking about earlier about not knowing what's good or what's bad. That, you know, I came from being this little girl who was convinced that if the world would just line up exactly how I want it to line up and then stay there, everything would be okay. And when I approached life that way, there was a lot of pain, you know? And so I had a strong motivation to move away from pain at all costs in my life. And, you know, doing the Gentle Healing Group, and I think the first or the second week that we met, Regina talked about spiritual aspirations. And there was this aha with me that my spiritual aspiration, you know, she had said, don't approach your spiritual aspiration from a negative place, not from a place of you're trying to not have something, but from a positive place where you're, you know, you're going into something. And I realized that I had always had a negative spiritual aspiration because I always was just trying to feel better. And it only got me so far. And I was really ready to hear that message when we started the Gentle Healing Group. I was really ready to hear that. And I really heard inside that, you know, I'm really looking for truth, no matter what that is and no matter how that feels. And, you know, there's a lot of really, really painful things that come up. I came to the Gentle Healing Group because of feeling a lot of extreme emotional pain and you know, one of those quote-unquote ego attacks. And, you know, I found that that was going on, and I wanted to do that. And even just a few months ago, you know, I can see how much I've grown in just a few months, but even just those few months ago, it was still really motivated by, I want to feel better. I want to feel better. I've got to do this gentle healing group because, okay, I'll find, you know, I'll feel better. I'll hear something that'll really take this pain away and that'll help. And in the last, I'd say, month or so, I've really gotten to where I really embrace and see that it's not about moving out of this moment one tiny bit. It's about what is in this moment and how I feel is how I feel. I took from my childhood, I really took the punishment and the judgment and I turned it inward. You know, I stopped living in my parents' house many, many, many years ago, but I took that voice that I learned from my father and I used it on myself for many years. And I still do at times, but I learned to motivate myself through judgment and anger and aggression toward myself. And when we were doing all these grievance lessons, it hit me really hard that it's not just about, the grievances aren't just, okay, I have this problem with this and it's keeping me from God. It can also be, I feel really great about something. I shared about it in the Facebook group, and I think I might have used my kids as an example, but it's really hit me where unconditional love means I don't regard my kids as any more important or special than any other human being on earth. And it's like feeling, oh, I'm so happy and I'm so grateful that my children are healthy and they're okay is a grievance. It's, I see all these little things that I've always held to be, you know, good, positive things that I'm trying to move toward in my life. And I see how they're actually blocks. A lot of the negative things have cleared out, you know, where I'm not so much blaming negative situations for how I'm feeling, but then as soon as, like that, I say with my children, a good thing happens, you know, I do really well with something with my business and something works out the way I want to, and I say, oh, that's so great, I'm so grateful that happened. Behind that, I'm so grateful that happened, is the flip side of, if that didn't happen, that would be bad. You know, and where is the truth in that? How is that furthering me toward truth? It's not. It's actually, you know, these lessons have come at such a perfect time for me to see how I'm using the positive situations in my life to block me from God. And you know, it seems so counterintuitive, and that's especially for me growing up, you know, feeling for so many years in my life that I just needed to get the outside situation in order, and things would be okay. The other thing that I've really connected with our time in the gentle healing was I loved the Tess Hughes satsang. And after I listened to her, I found some more audio of her and some interviews and stuff with her. And I really, really connected with her and felt connected to her. My ex-husband is from the same part, you know, very close part of Ireland to where she is from. And I spent a lot of time there, and I know what the culture is like there, and what it must have been like being the spiritual seeker that she was. And I really, really felt connected to everything that she said. She spoke about having a hard time sitting still in meditation. And I have a hard time with that too. And coming from that really judgmental, punishing, mean voice that I've carried with me throughout my adult life, I've wanted to be able to meditate well, you know, quote unquote, I want to be a good meditator, which of course right there, I mean, that's the ego right there. I've wanted to be a good meditator my entire adult life since I found out about it. And I have a hard time sitting in meditation. And she spoke about bringing it into every moment when she's going to wash the dishes, stopping for that minute and just being in that awareness and feeling that awareness. And I've taken that to heart, and I've started practicing that a lot in many moments in my life, and finding a place that I can sink back to that feels like that just open, loving space that is love, that space that allows everything that's going on to be exactly as it is, whether it's what we would call positive or what we would call negative. I'm still really trying to practice, go back to just sitting and practice the awareness, watching awareness. I'm still trying to go back and stick with that, but it's nice to know that there's other ways to go about it too, if you're struggling with the sitting still and sitting in meditation. And I also, Kathy had pointed out in the Facebook group to the Michael Langford teachings that were about, what were they called? The loving all, or loving everything. It's basically loving everything exactly as it is. Practicing that the loving all method. Thank you. That's a really, really helpful tool for me, I find, is, you know, whenever I think of it, practice accepting, you know, loving can be a nebulous and a hard thing to understand, but just simply allowing and accepting everything to be as it is. It's like that, like Regina talked about, that room that's just there that holds the space. It doesn't care what's going on in the room. It could be a very loving, kind act, or it could be a murderous, hateful act. It just allows. And that's my spiritual aspiration now, is to be in that space that just allows. And the other place where I am right now that I think is really an important thing to acknowledge, an important understanding to acknowledge, is that I also really, as a spiritual seeker, I think we tend to focus a lot on the negative side of the ego and how we dislike the ego and want to somehow eradicate the ego or get it under control or whatever it is. And I think that the idea of the ego being eradicated is a result. It's just a natural result of the practices that we're all doing and the seeking for the truth. And I really, just like with the alcoholism, I really feel lately a lot of gratitude for my ego, because my ego is what's looking in the first place, you know? I have no idea what's going on here on Earth. I don't know why I'm here. I could spend my entire lifetime following and looking for and trying to understand teachings that talk about all the different past lives we've had and what's going on with all kinds of stuff. But at the end of the day, none of us knows what's going on. You know, I'm here for some reason. I don't know why. I don't want to get lost in the search for why I'm here, because I think that takes away from my just being here. And so I have, coming from that place, I have a tremendous gratitude for the ego, because the ego, like I said, it's why I'm looking. It's why I'm even questioning these things. It's why I feel the discomfort I feel that makes me realize that I do believe that I'm separate. And there can't be a pushing against anything, because that'll just lead me down that path of trying to fix the outside to make the inside feel better. Yeah, exactly. Pushing validates. It validates and it strengthens. And I think that when all the great teachers talk about peace being within, and that we find peace within, and that's how world peace or any peace at all that you want to happen is going to happen. I think that's what's being touched upon, is that idea that any sort of pushing against, no matter how justified it may seem, no matter what something looks like on the outside and how unfair somebody's being to somebody else or whatever the situation, if there's a pushing against, it's part of the problem. So, I'm just, when I see, it's almost like a little child. I treat my ego more lately like just this part of myself that I know is here for a while, and that it's actually, the grip is definitely loosening, but if I try to force that grip to loosen, then I'm only contributing to that grip tightening. It sounds really counterintuitive, but I know that's what's going on. I can feel it. So I know, and I can't remember exactly, I don't know if it was Ramana Maharshi who taught it or what, but it's that idea of that stirring the tending the fire with the ego's like that stick that you tend the fire with, and it's there and it helps to stoke the flames and it helps to, you know, shift the firewood around to make sure that the fire keeps burning brightly and strongly. But eventually it's going to burn up, and it's going to burn up within the flames. And so I guess that's really kind of an introduction to me, I guess, you know, my path and where I find myself now. I guess I didn't really talk about the Course in Miracles, but I was very drawn to a Course in Miracles also, after I got into recovery, very drawn to a Course in Miracles. And it's been a big part of me being able to heal that rift that I've had and that relationship. I see it as this relationship with Jesus. You know, I was really scared of Jesus, and I feel like I've gotten that brotherly relationship back. And that's been a lot through the course, and it's been challenging, though, very, very challenging for me doing the workbook lessons with the Christian language. very, very hard. And I've gone through some periods since we started the Gentle Healing Group of being really, really angry and feeling really resentful and having just a lot of that stuff come up that needs to come up, the stuff that's buried in there that just needs to come up and come out. And so it's been a really, really helpful tool for me because I've wanted to give up on the course and just close the book and not do it. But the language is just language. Like I talked about in the beginning, when I came on here about, it's not about the language. It's about hearing what's behind it. It's the message that's behind it. And if I decide not to continue with the workbook lessons because I can't stand the Christian language because of how I grew up, then obviously I'm believing that it holds some power that it really doesn't believe, that it really doesn't hold. So what I'm doing with it now is simply using it as a barometer, where some days I feel a lot. Some days the language doesn't bother me at all, and it goes right off of me, and I know that's a barometer for how much openness and allowing, how much I'm residing in that space of love. And then there's times when the language is bringing up every memory and every hurt that I had in my young life. And I'm getting really angry about it. And I'm just allowing it to be what it is now. It's also, I'm in that space of allowing, but it's not something I need to run from. It's something that shows me that there's some inner work going on, and I just need to allow it to be there. And I guess that's kind of me in a nutshell, my little quote unquote story. And I want to thank everybody for being here, and thank you so much for Regina for giving the invitation to teach. And I really am enjoying teaching on the Monday about Adyashanti's book, from his book, The Way of Liberation. And, I'm just really grateful to have found this community and to be on this path. And you're very welcome for saying yes, Regina. So I know there's still a couple of minutes to go. I really don't know what else to say. I don't know if Ken, if you want to take back over, or if anybody has anything, if they want to take the mic and share it all, that would be great too. So whatever Ken, whatever you feel, or if anybody wants to raise their hand. Oh, okay, I'm going to release the mic. I am an electroform artist, I work with copper, and it's a really complicated process that I won't go into, but I actually got into it a few years ago, and it's a nice mix of that. I'm very intellectual, but I'm also very artistic as well, so it's a great mix of that left and right brain. And I create jewelry with copper and mostly with rough stones and crystals, and it's really nice because I'm in the moment. I'm able to practice just being in the moment and creating, and I'm really blessed to be able to do that and be able to be actually at home with my kids a lot through that. So I'm really grateful for that. And I live just outside of Chicago, literally two blocks outside of Chicago. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell. Oh, Jay, you're in Chicago too. Cool. Yeah, I'm Park Ridge, so I'm close to O'Hare. right, so I am going to let, Ken, I'm going to let you take over. I have 2 minutes to go, so I'll just let you take over if you want to do the announcements or whatever you want to do. But thanks, guys. And Jay, go ahead and send me a message. We can talk. I will release. Oh, yeah, I have to release the mic, don't I? Thanks, Regina. Thanks, everybody.
Me and your mama and some other whore float.